Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Ann and After Show. It's me, Lindsay Loveridge, and James Beckett is here, our professional opinion haver at Kick the Beckett on Twitter. Jackie's not with us because she's on an airplane, but I think once she gets off that airplane, we're going to keep her in one spot for a long enough period of time that she will be regularly here again. So today it'll be me and James talking about this big flashback backstory episode in Trigun Stampede. We also get quite a lot of that in Buddy Daddies this week, so we're going to talk about that. And we've got some lighthearted news. One is about a racehorse, and the other one is about Michael B. Jordan, who's been in the news quite a lot lately for his latest film because he's a giant nerd, and we respect that here.
So
we're going to talk about all that. Before we get to it, a reminder to please subscribe to this channel wherever you are watching it. We are on YouTube and we are on Facebook and we are on, I was going to say Instagram. We are on Instagram, but the show is not on Instagram. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and also Jackie's Discord, because she gave me access to it. So I am abusing that right now. We are streaming on Jackie's Discord. I'm sure she would be fine with it. It's fine.
Hi, Jackie's Discord.
She's here in spirit from the tarmac at Honolulu Airport. I think that's where she's flying.
We'll work in at least one Gungrave reference.
We will. We promise. For her, yes. Who are the guys in that show again? Should we just pretend we don't know anything about it?
Hat guy? I think there's a hat guy.
I think she said there's a dude named Brandon.
Is there a Brandon
in that show? Yeah.
There is now.
To Brandon Gungrave. The main character of Gungrave. That's for you, Jackie. Yeah. All right. Let's get right down to it. Let's talk about this Michael B. Jordan interview. He did an interview over at Polygon about all of the anime references in his new movie, Creed 3. Now, there's kind of been a promotional slant about that. Like IGN also had a video interview with him and some other folks where he talked about the fight scenes in that film directly being inspired by Naruto Shippuden and Dragon Ball, I think.
Yeah.
James, tell us a little more about this interview.
Yeah, so it's great. And what I like about it is, you know, because the quotes making the rounds recently have been kind of the same talking points where he just sort of, you know, casually mentions like, hey, this is like what the eighth Rocky movie, eighth Rocky/Creed movie. There's only so many ways that people have filmed boxing scenes, and I wanted to try to bring something new to the table because this is his directorial debut, Michael B. Jordan. And he is very famously a huge weeb.
Yeah.
And in this interview, he specifically says that he watches anime every day. And I totally believe it based off of some of his like in-depth cuts here. And finally, because I've been looking for this, to be honest, because the quotes that have been going around have mostly been him saying like, there's some shots where like, you know, they're like directly from like specific shows or specific influences. And finally, someone sat him down, someone with some knowledge. I want to say it is Toussaint Egan from Polygon. And they finally specifically said, all right, like break it down. We want to know because we're operating on the same level. Like, let's dig into these anime references. And you can tell, like, just through the text that Michael B. Jordan is stoked to be able to, like, let loose on his nerd. Because I'm sure with 90% of the press, he's like, yeah, anime references. Like, I can't spend 20 minutes going on about it. But, you know, but here we have, like, a situation where he can just straight up go into detail. So, like, the very first question Polygon asks, like, because there's a specific shot that's been going around of Kree getting punched in the gut. And it does that very classic, like, right? That, like, delay and then, you know, the exaggerated, like, you know, spit.
Curling in,
And they say, so that's, like, a DBZ reference, right? And immediately he's like, no, that's Naruto and Sasuke from episode 450 of Shippuden.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say that, you know, like, it's been in a lot of anime, right? It's been in Dragon Ball Z, Goku, Vegeta, but... and I think someone just mentioned it in the chat that the whole dynamic between Creed and Jonathan Majors' character, Damian, in this movie is very like specifically influenced by the brotherly rivalry between like characters such as Naruto and Sasuke.
Yeah. And, I think Jonathan Majors mentions it in this video you sent me, James.
I don't think Majors specifies the anime. I don't know if he could name Naruto. Like, it doesn't seem like, but
cartoon.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, he sat me down and showed me like three whole episodes of this cartoon.
Of the friendships in those stories, you know, and the rivalry.
And this is Jonathan Majors talking for everyone who's just listening.
Showed me one of his favorite anime cartoons, and it was these two best friends, and they get to a point where, and we really parallel this in some ways in our picture. They get to a point in the fight, in their battles, where everything else seems to fall away, and there's this idea that there's the fight that's going on externally, and there's a fight that's going on internally, and there's perhaps another fight happening on top of it that is more meta, more spiritual, more mystical that's happening. And
I just really like that part specifically because Jonathan Majors is so classy, and he's so classy, and he's just talking about it like from this very like refined artistic point of view. Also, his voice is very soothing and nice to listen to, and you have to stop and remember that he's talking about Naruto and Sasuke.
Yes. Yeah. If you want to, this is not related to anime, but there's a clip going around where I think it was Hector Navarro did an interview with Majors. Yeah. And Majors has mentioned in the past that he's a big fan of the movie Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey.
The original or the remake? This is important.
I believe the remake based on his age.
Oh, okay.
Based on his age. And I guess I don't know if I've seen the original, but specifically in the remake, the end where the golden retriever
comes over the hill
and he's limping, right? Mm-hmm. And Hector Navarro mentions to him like this fan theory, because every movie has to have a freaking fan theory these days,
really?
that the golden retriever died, and that him making it home in that final scene was actually him going to heaven and being reunited with his family in heaven, which is like, why would you ever do that to that movie? No, he lives. That's like,
this is for the children, guys.
Yeah.
I had that movie recorded on tape off the Disney Channel as a kid.
Yeah.
And I watched the heck. Sassy is a great cat.
Just a great cat. you can see Jonathan Major's face like fall when he like realizes what's being described. And I'm pretty sure he genuinely starts to tear up. Like he starts to cry.
unlocks the memory, a childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful. Like the idea that he could have that. And it's he seems like a great guy.
Yes. Yeah, he does. It's so funny though, because I mean, for those of us I think who grew up watching that movie, you're like, so you know, the end, I'm like, when the golden retriever comes up over the hill. Cause everyone I think that's like a childhood core memory.
If you're a child watching that, you're like, if that dog doesn't come over that hill in the next 5 seconds, I am throwing a rock through this TV and we are salting the earth. I feel
like that was part of a genre of children's films that was popular at the time, where it was just voiceover of live action footage, because we had that one. And then Napoleon.
Yeah, it was like a little golden retriever puppy. He's like in a balloon, like a hot air balloon.
I was going to bring up Milo and Otis.
Which
was also like that. And
Look Who's Talking.
Look Who's Talking was the other one I was going to bring up, which I think going back now, that one's not as child oriented. There might be like some humor in there, but I haven't seen it since I was a kid. So everything that was not appropriate.
I watched all those movies quite a bit when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And if I remember right, the first one and probably the sequel definitely have a lot of the more adult humor, because like you have John Travolta, you got Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis might be. There's the third one where it's the dogs.
Yes. Right? Yep.
And that one I remember liking the most. So I'm assuming that was the one that was more like.
Yeah, I think the dog poops in the back seat. That's one of the jokes I remember from that movie specifically. Like, I left you a present, and it's
probably pees on someone's shoes, and then there's like that slow like pan up where like the guy realizes that his shoes just got peed on, and then it goes back to the dog, and the dog like raises its eyebrow or something.
Yeah, I saw Milo and Otis a ton of time because If ever it was raining too hard that they couldn't let us out for recess as a kid, like we would go to the gymnasium or, we'll just say the gymnasium, they'd have, you know, the TV on the cart and it was Milo and Otis.
Oh,
and
that's how I also go to.
Mm-hmm. And that's also how I saw the original Homeward Bound. And I remember just not liking it nearly as much. It might be because the dog that is Chance in the original is played by a bull terrier, I think. And I'd never seen one of those before as a kid. And they're weird looking.
They got like the really kind of squinty, like flat.
Smooth, sloped muzzle all the way down. I mean, they were bred specifically so they'd be able to, for that, for hunting purposes. But as a kid, I was like, it's a weird looking dog. What's up with that dog? Anyway.
Anime. Yeah.
If you dub over cats, that's still anime, right?
That's some kind of animation.
It's some kind of anime. Okay. The next story I had, this one's just for funsies. You guys probably know that like horse racing and betting on horse races is kind of a popular gambling activity in Japan. I'm using the word popular really loosely here. I don't really know how many people engage in it. I just know that the JRA.
I mean, there's that whole anime.
Yeah, there's that whole anime just about horse racing. And the Sexy JRA. Horse racing. Yeah. And the JRA has sponsored like shorts, including one from Mr. Osamatsu. A couple other ones, those were centered on horse racing. Well, there's a horse in Japan. It's won its last two races. In case you didn't know, its name is Hellshake. There's a horse named Hellshake in Japan. It was actually named first, and then where it was brought up for racing, they put out a rider jockey wanted ad specifically for someone whose name was Yano. So the person who rides the horse, his last name is Yano, which is apparently a pretty popular last name in Japan. So it's Yano and Hellshake Yano. It's a real horse. And it won its last race at Kawasaki Racecourse on Monday. And it also won its previous race on February 3rd.
Damn straight.
There's no real point to the story. I just want everyone to know that there is a horse named Hellshake that is winning its races in Japan with its jockey Yano. So,
I mean, look, we can debate best anime of 2020, whatever year that was, 2022, all day and night. But how many of those anime actually had enough influence to create a real world jockey horse combo that won real world money? Potentially for the real world Yakuza? I don't know. Allegedly.
I've never heard that the Yakuza are involved in horse racing.
No, I only say that because I want to say, I can't remember where I read this, but I read that there's like some, like, they're maybe joking, but there was like this, it was either a meme or just an ongoing joke with that Uma Musume show where, the Yakuza were like somehow involved in like the production or something. I can't even quite remember. But I mean, come on. We know for a fact the Yakuza are involved in Japanese horse racing. Let's be real.
It's horse racing. Yeah. I mean, I can neither confirm nor deny, but would not at all be surprised if someone wants to deep dive in. Where's, his name just left me. Who's the Tokyo Vice guy? Jake Adelstein. Can we ask him like what's going on? Yes. He would know, I feel like. Yeah.
He would.
So there you go. Picture on screen of Hellshake and his jockey Yano rushing towards the win. If the big screen behind them is any indication, I think they had a pretty fair lead there too.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah,
there's a nice gap. Don't know how that ended up, but good for Hellshake.
Good for them.
All right. That's about it for the news this week. So those are our two fun stories. Now we're going to get into the sad, weird backstory of Vash the Stampede, starting with his perfect... Did you know this would be the first picture? Is that why you laughed? Our perfect boy's birthday.
Look at him.
I didn't notice the red geraniums are actually in the background. Those get brought up later in the episode as why he likes the color red and that Ren liked the color red and that she grew red geraniums. But I didn't notice at the time that they're actually seen here. So this is a this confirms Vash and Knives are in fact twins, not just like clones, but like twins. And Knives does not need to eat. He's just a somber little dude, right? Like, not like impervious to a good time, but actively fighting against his. I mean, he's still wearing the hat.
And when you take into account that these boys are, they're the size at this point of like, what, 10-year-olds, right?
Yeah, I'd put them between like 10 and 12.
Those are very like large birthday hats. Like, those are very big.
They're in space. They have all sorts of access to things we don't have here on Earth, like giant birthday hats.
Those are some clown-sized birthday hats, I'm telling
you.
Like, Which is great.
We can't see the tops of them. I wonder, it'd be better if they had little fuzzy balls on the top too. But, you know, they've got what I assume is carbonated orange soda, some poorly over-oiled French fries.
Yeah, no, they're looking a little soggy there.
Yeah. I don't know, a space brownie.
That just looks like concentrated food brick.
Concentrated food brick.
Are those breakfast sausages over there?
Yeah, what is this? Little, Ram, little slabs of jerky meat or something? You know?
And yet they have a perfectly decorated birthday cake.
They like, do. They have the saddest little sandwich. I don't think it's a burger.
Like, it doesn't have meat. I don't think it's just tomato and cheese.
What if they don't eat meat? What if, because they're plant people, they don't eat protein? And this is all like vegan or something.
But that, I mean, that looks like an egg sandwich over there to the left.
This?
Yeah.
No,
more to the left. The
little triangle. Like an egg salad sandwich?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe eggs are fine. I don't know. I guess this one looks like it's got some salami on it.
Maybe that's salami. That's still, that's an insane sandwich.
Or tomatoes. I don't know.
That is a sandwich made by someone that has never seen or heard of a sandwich before, but they had to throw something together for these two artificially, well, not artificially grown, but these two plant boys.
Yeah, these two plant boys. Everyone in the comments is coming to Rem's defense saying that ship rations are hard to work with and Rem did what she could and looks like a birthday at a hotel breakfast area.
Yeah, this is some continental breakfast like scoops. That she just
Well, hey, you know, Vash looks, he looks happy about it. But yeah, I liked this interaction between Rem and the boys too. Like she's treating them like her own children. And I don't think they say how, there's only one candle on there. They might only be.
No, they say it's their first birthday.
So they were like, they came to life starting this size. There was no infant.
Or they like, I mean, if Wolfwood, you know, can go from like 10 to like 28 in the span of a few months.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be, you know, maybe they popped out as like little babies and then within like a couple weeks or something, they were like walking around all preteen size.
Yeah. They also point out that, it's so cute. They also point out kind of what their deal is, and that they are plants, but they're independents as opposed to the other types of plants. And that means that rarely a plant gives birth.
Yes.
And the plant people we've seen, like who Vash appears to be able to like soothe psychically, and you know, he can hear them and communicate with them. You know, they looked bigger than the average human, even though they're humanoid.
Yes.
So I don't know, like they could have just sort of like came out of a spore, giant spore thing and sort of been this size. But
and it makes you wonder, like, do they look human? Do all independents resemble humans, like with like hair and more human, you know, did they reproduce asexually? Like, do they just, you know, pop one out just kind of because? Did a human like sneak into one of those tubes? And, like,
no, James.
I'm genuinely wondering why.
Yeah,
why
I don't think so. I'm thinking it's a kind of like that situation with that shark that reproduced asexually in an aquarium in like Italy. Oh, okay. Did you read about that? That's yes, where they're like, well, I'm supposed to reproduce, you know, but nothing here to do that with. Guess I'll just reproduce asexually all of a sudden by cloning my...
Pop out a couple of Culkin brothers and...
They do! It's Macaulay and...
And Rory.
Rory. I was going to say Ronan. Yeah, Rory right there. But that's still kind of unclear. What we do get a sense of is that, at least what I think is happening, is that humanity has been cultivating a sentient plant race and using them to harvest certain things, because when we meet Brad, kind of just skipping to Brad here, Brad, after the big crash and Vash flees, he asks Vash, like, what do you make, you know? And I forget, like, all the things that he lists off, but it's like...
Like all sorts of chemical compounds.
Things like that. Oxygen. I assume power is one of them.
Electricity,
which is why they're used in the plants around town. And they seem to be reliant on them for resources at this point. So I forgot where I was going with this. So yeah.
Vash doesn't make anything.
Vash doesn't make anything. And we don't know for a fact that what Knives makes, or if he makes nothing, you know.
I think he said something. I can't remember. I wish I got a screenshot. It was hard because it was like a long conversation.
Yeah.
I know he mentioned that he eats, but I think he, maybe Knives make knives. Maybe that's what he makes.
I mean, blades or something. I mean, Vash requires... I actually am not clear if Vash actually requires food or if he just eats it because he enjoys it. Because he kind of goes on a hunger strike while they have him in captivity here. And he just starts like marking down his time in there, like a prison cell, because that's essentially what it is. And he's refusing to eat. And he doesn't seem to get emaciated in any kind of way. So, but Knives then points out at the very beginning of the episode that he doesn't need food. Like Vash does. So I'm not sure. Maybe Vash can live on less food than the average human. I'm not quite sure if he requires food.
And they haven't specified where the plants come from, right? Like, we don't know if they're aliens or genetic like experiments or what, right?
I assume they came from space, because we do know there used to be a spacefaring age prior to what's going on in the current time that got brought up. People in the comments are also mentioning, you know, that mention in episode 3 about Vash can't access his gateway, which might mean he can actually produce something, but he doesn't know how or is limiting his abilities in that way. And the gateway thing sound like, I interpret that as an alternate dimension, just based on sci-fi terminology.
Yeah.
So
that's what I thought.
So following that line of thought, I would think the plants are extra dimensional.
Okay.
So anyway, we still haven't gotten, we don't get in this episode, and maybe we will in the next one. We don't really know why Knives decided to blow everything up, other than the fact that maybe he's just sociopathic or something, but like.
Or that he's like mad about the plants being locked up and used for power and stuff.
Yeah, which, you know, understandable to a degree. Methodology, maybe not great, but reasoning could make an argument for. Because it does seem like at this point in time, that's been his motivation. Other than torturing Vash for funsies, he's been collecting all of the, all the plants from the humans that are using them as a resource, so... Yeah. People in the chat are saying they're not treated like sentient beings. Yeah, they're not treated like sentient beings, but I feel like they are. I mean, obviously Vash can communicate with them. I'm not sure exactly, like...
I mean, they have eyes and a face. I don't know why they would have those things if they didn't have some degree of sentience, right? Like, it's not,
and they have vitals too, because they they were monitoring, and it seems like the ones that are closer to humanoid may be more powerful, because we've seen ones that just look like onions, you know, they don't, unless maybe, but they're all, what if they're just all curled up and they could open?
I think that's the implication, is that like they're all, you know, they can, and I couldn't quite tell if, I forget her name, Luida?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if like she was surprised when the plant opened to see that there was like a humanoid thing, when she was like, oh, it's blooming, or if that was just like bad.
So
I'm not sure.
Right? Yeah, because like, she says, yeah, it seems like maybe they hadn't seen that before, and it's possible that
that just looks like a big old person.
Yeah, like maybe the opening might be, I don't think it's a reaction to Vash, because he'd been on the ship for a while at this point, right? So that's probably not what it is. He was on the ship for several months before, I think it's possible maybe all of them could open, and they're just different sizes and have different, you know, abilities as far as their resources go. But I wish the original was fresher in my mind. I don't remember ever seeing actual aliens like this in the original, but I might have just mind wiped.
I saw some people saying that this was a big deviation.
Okay.
I don't know. I've never read the manga or seen the original anime, but I've seen people comment that this is a significant departure compared to the more like stylistic or like timeline departures that we've gotten from the previous episodes.
Yeah, all I remember from the original, I mean, the Vash and Knives being plants was in the original anime. I definitely remember that, and you know, Knives being behind the big crash, and you know, Rem dying in the crash, and I remember Knives having a conversation, and this might come up in the next episode, because the conversation definitely took place before the crash, and it was between Knives and Vash's kids, and it always stuck in my head when I saw it, because Knives starts talking about a spider, like there's a spider with a spider web in between some leaves or something, in like that big open area where we saw them interacting, and they have a conversation about like the nature of the spider, and that it's in the spider's nature to kill, and you know, just sort of this like dark interpretation, assuming that I haven't made this all up, but that's what I recall, that
like that classic Darwinism angle, like we're the superior beings, like we're more powerful, and you know, we shouldn't be the fly trapped in the web, we should be the spider, right?
Like, I think it was something of that nature. So I assume that's still somewhat the basis of his actions now with the plants, is that we shouldn't be subjugated, we should be ruling, kind of deal. Although, I mean, even if it was just, we need to take all the plants and send them back to where they're supposed to be and free them from the humans, and the humans should find a new planet. I don't know if I disagree with that, to be honest. I feel bad for this lady, this plant lady in the pink goo.
Yeah, like, it's not cool.
Isn't there something else she'd rather be doing right now, you know, other than powering a spaceships? Yeah. No. Okay. So Theo says, I've got it backwards. And in the original anime, Knives calls humans the spider and plants are called the butterfly. And to save the butterflies, the spider must be killed.
Also, a more reasonable argument. And again, I mean, this is kind of, you know, I guess not genocidal because they're not killing the plants, but it's enslavement. And that's not cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Mr. A says in the manga, Knives says that he calls humans garbage, less than vermin, and rotting, wasting meat.
It's hard to argue with, to be honest.
And LFR says,
you look at Twitter and it's like, yeah.
LFR says, plant freedom is a noble cause. Knives just wants to murder all the humans to do it. Which, so
harsh.
Harsh, but it's maybe harsh. Fair. I mean, we kind of suck. As a race, we were given the opportunity to
we let Scott Adams publish that shitty Dilbert comic for like 50 years.
Oh, we gotta talk about Dilbert. That guy is so let's just, his career's done. So in the end,
or is he just gonna like go to
Truth Social?
And yeah, what's the racist Twitter? Yeah. And he's just going to go there. And then it's all going to be, they're going to become like freaking Chick Tracks, but with worse art. It's going to be Dilbert just ranting racist propaganda and like sexist screeds.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know what, Knives? go ahead. Go ahead.
We had a good run, you know?
Yeah. Just spare the anime studios, spare the cats, you know? Yeah.
So with Vash though, here he got a little like teenaged up, but it seems like all they have him do, I want to kind of have a better idea of what he's doing. Is he just like psychically soothing these plants trapped in these industrial vats?
Like, yeah, he's like empathizing with them. Like he can feel their pain and he can feel their sickness. Now, I guess to the point we were just discussing, it doesn't seem like they're crying out in pain and suffering usually. But yeah. I don't know if that means that that's because they're normally like comatose or something, or mm-hmm. if they're actually not actively being harmed during when the pods are like blue.
Yeah, I know that like Vash has this whole pacifism things going, but I don't know if it's good enough to just like temporarily soothe the plant people inside the bats so they can go back to being power sources and not get mad. Like,
I mean, maybe that's like, maybe it's like a part of his power, you know, is like some kind of telepathy or some kind of, maybe what he makes is like good vibes. You know, like literally, like maybe he like produces like, you know, like positive
vibes,
feel good, yeah. The feel good. Yeah. I don't know what you call them, and that, you know, he's like a THC, you know, aerator, but we're like psychically.
Are you saying Vash is just like, he's just cannabis, he's just like humanoid cannabis.
Yeah,
hash, I mean, why not? Where are you titling this episode? Hash the Stampede. And I gotta get a new thumbnail screenshot.
Would that get us in trouble? Okay.
No. And then I'm gonna get a new thumbnail screenshot and we're gonna put gold chains and like the blingzy stuff from that. Yeah.
Give him bloodshot eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's most of what happens there. I assume that we're gonna get more context in the next episode. This definitely felt like a two-parter. So
were you also, I got, so there's one part of the episode that really confused me.
Yeah.
Not because I didn't understand what was happening, but I didn't really understand how we got there.
Okay.
And that's, so what's his name? Not Brandon, that's Scungrave. Brad.
Brad. Yeah.
When Brad unlocks the black box after like 5 years of tinkering with it and learns that Vash either wittingly or unwittingly helped Knives murder everyone,
mm-hmm.
and kind of says some mean things and makes Vash run away with his shiny new coat and all that.
Yeah.
It cuts to him like he's out with his ostrich and he's like running away.
Chocobo.
His chocobo. and Luita like goes after him, and there's just sort of like there's a cut where like he's just sort of looking out at the desert, and then all of a sudden, without any transition, he wakes up in bed and his arm is glass or whatever it is. And he's like, oh, I'm back home. Like, did they save me? And I understand that, like, obviously there's like been a big time skip and I'm pretty sure everyone from ship 3 is horribly dead by Knives. But I wasn't entirely, like, it felt like a scene was missing. Like, it felt like there should have been a scene where like Vash got like attacked by a sandworm or something.
I think I see where you got mixed up. So that scene was weird because it was a flash forward within the flashback that is not a full flash forward to the current time. So what happened is Vash leaves, right? And he leaves his coat behind and he goes off into the desert. And then they do a flash forward.
Oh, that's modern Vash?
Not quite. But there's a flash forward. And he's like, oh, they must have saved me. And now I have this new arm. And then they flash. But that flash forward is not to current time. It's like some in between. And then it flashes back again to when he was back in the desert. and he comes upon knives in them. So what happened is that he returned to the wreckage. It's not ship three. It's the wreckage from, you know, the ship he was on with Rem. He goes there when he runs away and he sees knives in them. And that's the end of the episode. But that part in between is going to come after that. So there's going to be something with knives in them. Vash is going to get knocked out, or, you know, he's going to lose his arm or something. And then he's going to wake up back in ship three, presumably with them having replaced his, like, done surgery to replace his arm. It was weirdly placed. It threw me off a lot.
Chad's saying that it is modern Vash, that's like a cut back to just after the Wolfwood.
Is it?
Which also doesn't make sense.
The framing made it seem like the arm was new.
That's what I thought. I thought it was
right after he got the
arm. Or he like looked at it and like realized, oh no, because now that I think about it, he's like looking at it and his face falls. And so maybe it's him going, oh no, my arm. But how the hell did he get there? The last we saw of him, he was just like,
people are saying that is a weird flash forward to after the Wolfwood fight. But where he wakes up at looks a lot like ship three, right?
Yeah. And he goes into the same bridge with all the things. It was very strange.
Yeah, that is very strange.
There was no reason at the end of last episode for us to think that. It's not like he got knocked out at the end of the last.
Yeah, they said it's post-fainting. He has his black turtleneck. His arm's damaged from the railgun. Why did they flash that there and then flash back again to him going inside the wreckage and seeing knives for the first time?
Because I thought that, because my reading up until just now was that was the first time he'd seen knives since the crash. Like, that was a big reunion.
But
But this is just the reunion after he'd murdered everyone at, was it June, May, whatever the little town was.
So then when he wakes up, that's during the whole, like, they just stopped the ship from wrecking into the orphanage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And now I'm like wanting to go back and look at screenshots from episode 7. Where did Vash end up during that? Was he thrown off the ship?
No, the episode ended with him calming down the plant. And then the very last shot was Meryl going, oh my God, he's a plant. And that's it.
Okay. Like right. Yeah. He's communicating with the plant and he had that big moment and that in front of all of them. And Yeah. We've also got AJ here who from the Cartoon Cypher, he reviews this series for us. And he says, I think the implication is that he's remembering all of this in ship three. We have no idea why he's there based on last week though. So yeah, that's just.
Oh, was there like a sound, like a thud sound when it cut to black?
I guess so, because Trelawness is saying his body hit the floor, so it's presumed that he passed out.
So
I guess we're just not supposed to know. I interpreted the timeline of that completely wrong. Thank you, chat. Yeah. I will go into the next episode having a better idea of what happened.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Okay, so Buddy Daddies this week was not as cute as usual, because now this episode didn't make me cry like last week.
It made me cry. So,
James, why did it make you cry?
I want to say it was, I got a screenshot of it, of the moment that made me cry.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was somewhere.
Near the end, was it where he said he also has something he wants to protect?
No, I saw that coming. I can't remember what it was. I'm sure it did make me cry, because I thought to myself, good Lord, how the hell is this show making me cry every week? What are you doing to me, Buddy Daddies?
Yeah.
Mary was a cutie pie, though. She was.
Mary was a cutie. Yep. This is a Ray episode, and it's all about Ray gets called home, which in this case, home is the headquarters for the assassin organization that they work for. His dad is the boss. He's the evident heir, but he, you know, has been miserable his entire life until he found happiness with Kazuki. but now he's got to go back and confront his dad. Is this just a picture you picked of Miri because she's making cool hand gestures?
Well, I try to pull double duty, right? I try to find screenshots that'll be good for the socials, and then screenshots that would be useful for the recap. And so there are several shots in here that are just sexy shots of Rey. Uh-huh. And there are several shots that are just adorable shots of Miri.
Here's one that we can only tweet on the 10th of August.
Yeah. But, you know, for our birthday things.
So we yes. So yeah. So, yeah, if I didn't make it evident, whenever Rey is in his murder suit, that means he's extra hot because he's got his hair pulled back. Yeah, he does clean up nice. I enjoyed the conversation Miri had with Kazuki about Rey's dad in grandpa terms.
Rey Papa, and, no Papa.
Yeah, Rey Papa, no Papa. Yeah. And also that
their teacher isn't good at singing, I guess.
She isn't good at singing or music. Like, she's been kind of the perfect daycare lady this entire time, and now we know that whenever it's sing-along time, it terrifies all the children. But Rey's dad he's horrible.
Yep.
And obviously a patriarchal son of a bitch is what I called him in my review. Because
that's accurate.
That's all he cares about is lineage and continuing
the bloodline.
The bloodline and tradition. And he doesn't allow his own son to call him dad. He has to call him boss, which is gross. Just, you know, having
making Rey sad.
Yeah, making Rey sad. Now we know why he's a little sad gamer boy. His dad never hugged him. We have no
idea. I'd be a sad gamer boy if I was him.
Yeah, I would too. You know, he's better adjusted than I would expect most people in his situation. We don't know anything about his mom, to my knowledge. Here's Rey's Kaiji era from when he's just like emaciated and does not shave and is probably drinking soda out of a glass with a sippy straw. And
so in the chat, LFR says that the gay subtext is strong today, and oh boy,
yeah,
Kazuki is the ideal wife. he's truly the best wife.
He is in this
anime.
He is, yeah. He's perfect house husband. He's doing arts and crafts with Miri so that they can decorate the condo for Rey's birthday. He's not even aware that it's his birthday. They also have a giant party hat.
But she's four, so that hat should be big on her.
It does have, and it has the little, tiny little poof on top, like I asked. So. Yeah. Miri still has really good faces.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, they want Rey to abandon his family and take up assassinating full time, and they're going to test him specifically by having him murder a former teacher who's betrayed the company by, I don't know, getting a girlfriend.
Yeah, leaving. I think it's exactly what Q said.
Yeah.
If you try to live a normal life and leave the biz, you'll just get horribly murdered. So don't do that.
Yeah.
But this guy comes back. This dude whose name I still don't know. I just call him Anton.
I had to look it up, and I think it's Ro.
Ro
Ogino, I think is his last name. He is terrifying, but not just in how like blatantly psychopathic he is. So you can tell like he cares about no one.
Don't worry, I didn't get a screenshot of the murdered corpse of this poor woman.
Yeah, thank God, yeah. But yeah, he goes over that whole thing with Rey, like that's normal car conversation. Like, hey, so you're the heir to the murder company? Just wanted to let you know that I totally like axed this guy's girlfriend. And then I wrote down her last words because it gets me off in my tiny little murder journal. And hey, when you go kill this guy, can you make sure to tell me the last thing he says? Because I'd like to also write that down right next to her in my creepy little murder journal. And it's just like, I mean, I guess if you go into assassinating as a business, like there's only so many personality types to be suited for that.
I honestly was thinking that if there's anything about this show that suspends disbelief,
mm-hmm.
it's that Kazuki is like a generally well-adjusted and decent person. For someone that murders people for a living.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really seem to have any hang-ups about that part of the job. Rey seems more broken up about the killing than Kazuki does.
Yeah.
This guy, this I know I joke about Anton Chigurh, but this guy, this whole scene gave me like huge Coen Brothers vibes, just like casual, like, oh yeah, you know, I collect last words. So, you know, when you kill this guy, just make sure to write him down for me. Okay. It's like
this. I'm also kind of want to go back and watch this episode to see if we ever see this guy blink. Cause he has like this look on his face all the time of just like intense staring. And I keep expecting him to blink like a lizard would, or like it's like sideways,
or like or one something. At a time.
Yeah, yeah, something weird like that. About Kazuki being well adjusted, I think, did we see him? Have we seen him shoot anyone? Because I've started to wonder if he's more like the infiltration and setup guy, and then he does that for Rei, and then Rei is the trigger puller.
You know, that's a good. I for some reason. I thought I remembered him taking shots in that first episode.
When he was dressed as Santa?
But now you mention it, I don't actually know. I mean, he shot at the dude that he unsuccessfully shot at the guy that blew up his wife.
His wife, yeah. I was thinking that. I think he fired a gun in that scene too, yeah. Yeah, LFR says he tried like during that flashback where Yuzu died. So maybe the only time he was pulling the trigger, it wasn't successful. This is just Miri being much older than her age. Men are such a mystery. But yeah, so it ends up coming down to
the men that she lives with. It's true.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. And then it comes down to Rei getting into a knife fight on a roof. And you know, he's able to pull ahead
a
of it.
A knife and a karambit. This guy's not messing around.
Yeah. He had a weird, like, curvy, like, short blade, right? Is that what that's called? A karambit?
Yeah. I just forgot the name of the martial art, but like in the raid, right? That's the kind of knives that they use all the time. They're like, they're supposed to mimic like tiger claw.
Oh, okay. So. Or a dinosaur, if you're like into raptors, right? Painful. Yeah.
You know what? Neil from Jurassic Park. That would be his weapon of choice. Sam Neil.
He was in a fighting game, right? Yeah. I was also
And he'd only use it against annoying children.
People who call raptors turkeys. Yeah. When it comes to this final fight too, Rei doesn't technically kill him. I mean, he kind of does, but he falls. And of course, our Ogino doesn't get the satisfaction.
It's a Disney death. He gets the Disney villain death.
Yeah, he gets the Disney villain death. The Gaston and Scar and stuff. Yeah. But we're almost to the end here, James. What part made you cry?
It was this. It was this exact line.
It was the birthday.
And the, she wanted to make you happy, and then Rei smiles. Ah. She does the drunk toddler thing.
Yeah.
And then we get that little smile. Yeah.
Because he forgot his own birthday, but they didn't.
Now, is this the first time we've seen him smile in the show? I didn't think so, but.
I don't think so, because I think I'd have to go back and check, but I wouldn't be surprised if he smiled when he found his Mario Kart mascots at that cheap store and got to buy them.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. But of course, the episode closes and it's pretty much set up the fact that Rei's dad has put a hit on Kazuki and Miri because he wants to free his son up from his emotional attachments. So
now Papa Reno Papa has to die.
They're gonna have to shut down the whole thing. I know that they've been setting this up, like it's gonna be a face-off with Ogino, employed by Rei's dad to kill Kazuki and Miri. Do you think Kazuki and Miri will get kidnapped, or just Miri and they'll both have to save her? Which one?
Probably the latter.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to be the season finale is going to be, it's going to take a sharp right turn into like dramatic, you know, action heavy. And it's going to be like a John Wick style, like kill every hitman. Scenario. Although we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I think. I know that realistically, Miri needs to get out of that apartment and into the arms of someone that does not murder for a living. I know that. I recognize that.
Yeah.
On an intellectual level. On an emotional, on a truer level, if she ever leaves her two dads at all, I will revolt. And I will declare this a 0 out of 10 MAL score. So I just want them to know that.
You're going
to
review bomb. Yeah, it on Emma, yeah, on Mallory. Oh, yeah. If she leaves her two days,
I will make a video essay, and I will spend 4.5 hours detailing the problematic, neoliberal, anti-progressive, what's it? But also
another somehow, buzzword.
Also somehow SJW, NFT shilling. Elon Musk standing.
James, how?
I don't even know, but whatever I need to do, okay? I'm prepared to do it. I
will to get all the views.
Ray. Yeah, I'll be the Ray to this show's random target of assassination.
I mean, it's possible they could get like a heads up about this hit, and they have at least maybe temporarily, Miri's mom comes back in the picture to safeguard her while they take out the organization or something, and then
you know Q's gonna tell him. He's gonna tell him, right?
Yeah. He's a good guy, despite you know his job. Yeah, man. Because I feel like part of me is like, oh, Miri will get kidnapped, and then Kazuki, and then we'll have to save her. But the other part of me is like, Ogino would just kill her. He wouldn't hold her hostage because that's what he did with the other guy's wife, right? Like, The former teacher thought he was doing some kind of trade-off to get his wife or girlfriend or whatever back. And then as soon as Ray shows up, he's like, oh, you guys have already killed her.
Yeah.
So I don't know that if Miri was captured by Ogino, that he would actually hold her hostage. So part of me wonders if they'll avoid that.
Maybe Ogino wouldn't kill Miri because she wouldn't have any... Like, she's too young to have, like, any interesting last words, you know? Like, she doesn't understand mortality enough to, like, to satisfy his need to, like, capture the dying essence of someone. And so maybe he wouldn't, like, want to kill her because he wouldn't get anything out of it.
That's also possible. I mean, they've already encountered once, and it was the creepiest thing because he, like, picked her up like a cat, right?
Yeah.
And then set her back down and she's like, I'm sorry, I ran into you. And that was it. I was like, oh God, he's going to eat her or something. Like his mouth is just going to unhinge from his jaw. Like some
he's
sort
secretly
of,
gluttony from Full Metal Alchemist.
Some sort of terrifying snake man. And he's just going to swallow her whole and then writhe away. They should let me write anime.
Quanti 5 says that her last words would be like, I need to pee.
Yeah, it would be something like,
We can't have it be that. Like, we need to.
Maybe it'll be like a full scale. Everyone will get in on it. That little boy she made friends with will run like counter interference, and Anna will show up and play really
she'll
loud.
Show up with like a Glock. No, she just have a gun. She'll be like, no, I'm gonna kill these. I'm gonna kill these guys too. It's one of my students. Like, come on.
I was gonna say she like does plays really bad loud music as sort of a. Psychological warfare tactic, but
she brings up the Glockenspiel. She's like, I'm the Glockenspiel.
The Glockenspiel?
Yeah.
Jackie,
you're missing out.
You're missing out. This also probably would be the perfect place for a Gungrave reference. You could have told us what Brandon Gungrave would have done in this.
Or there's like a Gungrave villain named like Samus Glockenspiel.
That actually sounds more like Trigun. What was the villain that we talked about that.
Oh, the jazz one? What's his name? I forgot.
Horn Freak.
Horn Freak.
It's never not good. Yeah, I feel like, speaking back on Trigun a little bit, are we still thinking this is going to be a single season? Because I have not seen Mid-Valley of the Horn Freak yet, and I'm kind of really upset about that.
It is a crime. Mm-hmm. Granted, this could be one of those instances where, like, in like the last two episodes, they just start tossing, what are they called? The gung-ho guns? They just start tossing gung-ho guns left and right. and Vash has to reluctantly murder them or whatever he does.
We also haven't, I mean, I feel like they introduced Legato pretty strong with his psychic abilities. And I don't know that that's fully lived up to its potential yet either. Like,
oh no, there's definitely, I feel like I am starting at the pace it's been going. I do kind of feel like they're shooting for just one core, but I feel like the last couple episodes, based off of the little like bursts of action we've got, where you can tell they're kind of flexing their muscles and they're trying out new techniques. I feel like we're in for like maybe 30 straight minutes of just nonstop, gung-ho action.
I hope so. Yeah. I just, there were so many interesting characters in the original that we haven't gotten like to really see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe they'll leave it open for a season two.
Yeah.
They try to do like that. Oh, if, you know, if this is our only season, then it'll get like a decent enough ending. And then
if they do go for a season two, I would expect it to be quite a ways out still, because they are working on the final season of Beastars
too. And that's going to be double length, to my knowledge. That's going to be 24, so
I wouldn't expect. I mean, I guess I don't know how many people Orange employs, but I wouldn't expect it to happen until after that. They could be working on it, but I wouldn't expect it to premiere till after the last season of Beastars.
No, they're not MAPPA. They can't just pop out 8 shows a season.
Right. Mr. A says Youth Minister Legato needs to get in a fight with some people soon. Yeah. He needs to just start throwing people through the air and like mentally like crushing them like trash paper to throw in the bin and all kinds of wild stuff. I'd like to see that.
Meanwhile, Wolf is over here like, no, he doesn't need to, though. Like, he could not do that. I'd be fine. I'd be okay.
Reminder, did Wolfwood's friend / little brother character, was he dead by the end of?
No. Legato, they went back for his body, and he was like, oh, he'll still be useful. So maybe he's dead, and they'll just, like, turn him into a hideous puppet corpse thing. I don't know.
There's so many possibilities, yeah.
You'll be around.
All right. I think that about does it for this week. Thanks for going down memory lane about Milo and Otis with me. And, you know, we checked in on Buddy Daddies and Trigun. And we're going to be closing out this season here pretty soon already. Spring looks insane. James, have you looked at the spring season at all?
No, I try to. To pretend that the next season of anime isn't going to happen for as long as possible. Not because I don't love anime, but because, you know, it can be a lot to dig into. But honestly, I never thought I'd say this. After this season, which has felt kind of quiet and not super exciting, I wouldn't mind, you know, a little bit of overflow.
Yeah. Hell's Paradise is going to premiere in April. That's going to look good. Ancient Mage's Bride season 2 is premiering in April, which I'm super stoked about that. There's actually a lot of rom-coms that look halfway decent too, like Skip to My Loafer and, or maybe it's just Skip and Loafer. Skip to My Loafer would be cuter though, so they should use that title.
The one about, I don't want to call him the school shooter. That's not nice.
The Day Through My Heart.
Yeah, is that next season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of good stuff lined up for next season. And of course, we should probably talk about Attack on Titan, the final season, part one, next week. Because that's premiering on the 3rd of March. So that's coming right up. Yeah.
How is it already March?
I don't know.
Okay. Do your worst, anime. Don't.
Do your worst, yeah. Marshall's next season, too. So that's, you know, the one about the buff guy going to Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks cute.
It has to be better than real Hogwarts at this point. So.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you again at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Has it always been 9 p.m. Eastern?
Yeah.
Or is why it... does that sound weird? Like later than what I don't know. Anyway, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays. We'll be back. And thanks for joining us. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.